say live here. Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 116 of your Fans of Power podcast. Boy, it feels pretty good to say 116 episodes.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
It's not a monumental number, but just, you know, we've passed the 100 mark, you know, for 16 weeks now. But you're like, you know what, man, 116 episodes of talking about He-Man stuff.
Oh, definitely. Hold on. I had it turned down. I had the volume on the computer up. Now it's down, so there shouldn't be any audio problems beyond that slight little delay in my archaic feed of video. So we should be good then.
Man, I was trying to paint a nice emotional moment of how far we've come, and you
said, yeah, I ruined it.
You know, your VHS quality feed.
I had to ruin it. It always happens. Well, you can still do it. Yeah, you still got to introduce us. You haven't even.
Often I get, you know, sentimental and not angry as hell on this podcast.
Yeah, that is rare.
With your Taliban, you know, recording, you know, equipment.
Yep, I had to do it. I had to ruin that moment, the one moment where Tyler can actually be nice, relaxed, cool with everybody, and then suddenly, bam, I absolutely destroyed that moment. So, there you go. That's what usually happens.
You know, but regardless, well, we realize as we're recording this, not to dead too much, but the Super Bowl is currently going, so hopefully, you know, we'll I feel like I had somewhere to go with this.
Well, before anything, you know, just in case there are new people, you might as well introduce who we are, because you didn't even say who we are yet. Even though most people should know.
Well, yeah, in case you don't know who we are, and this is your first episode or whatever, but I'm Tyler Baker, and Joe Amato is the face and the red mask, the demonic red mask face. And if you have not figured out what this podcast is about, we make it a weekly effort to discuss everything Master of the Universe, the entire mythology from the cartoons, comics, toys, theories, storylines, She-Ra, New Adventures, 2000X. We don't focus on articulation of action figures and stuff like that. We focus on the meaty, in-depth discussions. We talk about characters, heroes and villains and factions and locations and wonderful stories, what ifs. I mean, there's so much to talk about this podcast. So our mission for this podcast is just keep it alive and just enforce that, you know what, there's more to He-Man than just what's currently available to.
I don't know if we just lost Tyler. I got you. Okay. For some reason you talked, and on my end, you completely froze and went out, and you kind of did on the screen, too. I'm watching the feedback of when it happens. So, but you're back now.
I'm trying to build up some good momentum with some positive, and you chime in again with more. I'm just waiting for, like, the multicolored bar to pop up on my side, you know?
Well, two things. Hold on. Technical. Well, it happened on the actual feed that I'm watching too, so. But here's a couple things. First, I want to say hey to JSP, Chris Simpson, Jackie Miller, Daniel Maynard, and Christopher Dahlberg. And don't worry, Christopher Dahlberg, you're not really late because we kind of started late. So we basically just started. So appreciate every one of you guys joining us here in the chat room. And let me see. Daniel Maynard's being a smartass. He said, Joe, tell your neighbors to get faster internet. They're hurting your podcast. I know I'm not leeching. I'm not stealing.
That, Joe, you might want to, you know, cut us some slack and customize something for him for some better internet service.
Exactly. He's trying to say I'm stealing somebody's internet. That's a bad one.
It's a pirate-free cable, too. So
yeah, you know. I'll upgrade someday, but I don't think it's just the internet. I think it's my tablet because I have an older type tablet, and I'm convinced the video quality that it gives out. Maybe that's what maybe slows it up. I'm not sure, but we'll see. And Nathan Kennedy has joined us in the chat room. So what's up, Nathan? Good to see you here.
You decided to turn us on and listen to us via the Super Bowl, whether you're watching it or not. We appreciate that people listen to us live or making it a priority to listen about He-Man discussions while the Patriots and the Eagles are duking it out. So
there you go. All right. Well, so anyways, yeah, a lot of people might be watching the Super Bowl. I mean, heck, I was watching it before we started this up too. But we're here to talk a lot of different things. Like you said, even theories, which we're going to discuss one where I'm not saying I'm completely right. Tyler might not be right. It's just...
What you're talking about then, I'm going to say, yes, we are right.
Well, either way, we'll discuss that. People are going to know what we're saying when we get to... It'll be the main first discussion. But first, I wanted to say, for anybody out there that was into those pop figures, those pop vinyl figures, that FYE, I guess, has got in the Mini Comic Colors Trap Jaw. So anybody looking for those little pop figures and like the Mini Comic Color Trap Jaw, it's at FYE. I remember somebody posted, I was like, what the hell is an FYE? I don't have this thing. I don't even know what it is.
What's an FYE?
I was like, what? I have no clue. And then somebody said, oh, it's a place that sometimes they have them in malls. I was like, oh, all right. I don't have it at my mall, so I ain't getting nothing around that like that around here. But he's supposed to be an exclusive there, and apparently, I mean, I don't think people have to worry about not being able to get them, because when they went FYE, everybody was taking pictures. There's tons of these son-of-a-guns. I mean, tons of them in the stores. So,
Jason, every FYE in America, and I'm sure there may be a few that have been overstocked. If you, the FYE that's in Roanoke, they have an entire wall just exploding with pop figures. I mean, everything you can think of, but, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to think that every FYE in America is jam-packed with mini comic variant Trap Jaws.
Yeah, it's, like you said, it might be certain sorts, possibly. So that was that little update. Just wanted to give that. But, no, we're going to start off first with, now, we've done a character profile on Scareglow before. But that was basically saying, you know, he appeared in this comic or wherever. But there's one thing we didn't discuss, and this is a thing that among fans, there's like a little bit of a division of what people think. I'll let you know what I thought about it, but it's some people think that Scareglow is Skeletor, as when Skeletor died and that became Skeletor's ghost. They say that is Skeletor in ghost form. And they get this because that, unfortunately, how they had to do the tagline on the figure, it's confused people because it says evil ghost of Skeletor. But the same thing can be said for Faker, where it was described as evil robot of Skeletor. That's how they meant it. But when you read it a certain way and you see him, people are going to think, hey, that Skeletor is a dead ghost. Now, I try to tell people that in all the canons that we've seen him in, meaning all the mini comics, Star Marvel comic books, even UK stories, never has it been said ever that it is Skeletor as a dead ghost. I'll get into, and we both will, of how he's been described, but because some people said, well, Joe, you got to prove to me. You know, you're not giving me enough proof. You got to prove that ain't Skeletor as a ghost. And I'm like, well, actually, you got to prove to me that it is Skeletor as a dead ghost, because besides a, in my opinion, a wrong way of, not a wrong way, just a describing way on the front of the package, it's got people confused. But when you see it's described as other warriors he has the same way, I'm thinking, you should see what it means. I never as a kid ever had that figure and thought, hey, this is dead Skeletor. I was like, this is a cool-ass glow-in-the-dark skeleton warrior that can strike fear into his enemies and paralyze them. That's what I thought. But you go ahead and then we can talk about all of his origins that we've seen.
I mean, it's a misunderstanding of the card back description. That's all there is to it. And yet I have no idea how in the world you got, and let's not over exaggerate, you know, I don't know how many people still want to believe after it's been pretty well denounced that it was a simple misunderstanding. That's it. And if you are a He-Man fan and a fan of Scareglow, and here it is 2018, and you're still going by the brief 5-word description of Scareglow on the card art or the front of the package, when it's been pretty well accepted that the character is a all new evil warrior that was introduced in 87, has no attachment to Skeletor other than being summoned from another dimension in the mini comic or like in the Star Marvel comic or various other canons. He is summoned kind of out of nowhere. You don't know where he comes from, but he is not the spirit of Skeletor. And how, and I don't know, because I don't care how many people are still holding on to it, but the simple fact is, like, it's a safe bet. The majority of the fans understand that it's just a misunderstanding. There is no argument to it. Why do you want to argue about it? And why would you think it's something that you must defend? You know, it's not like that's like trying to, you know, I'm trying to come up with another idea. Like, no, that's just, well, or it's not the best example, but saying the He-Man movie was a flop. Like when Joe and I figured out why it didn't make as much money, but it did make money, but people still knowing that will go, oh, no, the movie was a dud, didn't make any money. Even after Joe and I have also clarified that the movie was making money and was pulled from theaters due to bankruptcy issues, people will hear that and still say, oh, no, it was flop, didn't make any money. You know, it was no good, you know, but you still want to sit there and say that Scareglow is the ghost of Skeletor, like his, yeah, his spirit. It makes no sense why anybody would continue to carry a flag for something that has been disproven.
Yeah, because, I mean, to give the examples of everything that we've seen as for story-wise when we were growing up, depending on where you lived, but as for the mini-comic, he's summoned from, yes, space and time, another dimension with Ninjor. So, right there it is said he's summoned from somewhere else. It never said, I am going to summon my dead spirit from the future. This was never said in any form. So, first there's that one. Then there's the Star Marvel one, where he says he's going to have Scareglow help him because he's worked with him in the past, and he tries to trick people with him thinking that's his evil double or whatever. But still, again there, it never said, this is my dead ghost from the future. And then the other one, where it was a UK story. Skeletor had which you could call basically, it looked like a round Rubik's Cube, if you want to say it. And with this round Rubik's Cube item, he was able to summon Ninjor, and also he wanted to create, he said, somebody in his image, and he created Scareglow. But he said he created him in his image, but again, he didn't say it was his dead ghost or anything, but that was another thing, just to look like him, look like a skeleton. But otherwise, when I had this figure, when I read the mini comic, the Star comic, I was like, this is a really cool, I mean, it's a glow-in-the-dark figure, but it's a character that strikes fear into his enemies. And also, if this was Skeletor, why in God's name would you say, okay, now let's ditch the Havoc staff, give him a scythe or a staff, and give him a cape, and just give him weapons that have nothing to do with what Skeletor was? Why wouldn't he have a glowing Havoc staff and still had some of, like, his crossbone armor and a cape? Like, why ditch that? Why give this? Why give that? It's like, the reason is, it's a completely different character. I never as a kid once thought, this is Skeletor. Yes, you could say, oh, it's a skeleton and a skeleton, but I mean, God, there's tons of skeletons within, you know, fiction and history and anything that you can think of. There's a lot of skeleton characters or warriors. Why can't there just be one that does this, and then there's Skeletor? But, yeah, I never got it. I never understood that when people think, just because that tagline in the front, that was just interpreted maybe a different way.
Well, if they're going to follow that, then they must follow that in the He-Man and the Power Sword mini comic that Stratos is clearly seen with the Evil Warriors. Oh, well, I guess Stratos is a villain. And that Filmation and all the other various books and canons all got it wrong, because in this one mini comic, I've chosen to believe that Stratos has and will always be a villain, even though there is no, it was just strictly a goof. And if you are a scholar of He-Man history, you know that this toy line cartoon series from the beginning has made changes as it's going. It's everything has been improvisation. You know, by the time they create it and get it out to us, there's been so many changes from conception to prototype to the final look. Same thing with the cartoon, where, you know, Lizard Man looked a completely different way, and then it eventually kind of led to how Whiplash looked, and we got Lizard Man. You can go to James E. Talk's YouTube channel to find out more about that tidbit. There has been constant alterations to these characters, and that clearly, it's just a misunderstanding. It's bad wording, and that is it. And for fans, if you want to believe that Clawful is really the redheaded stepchild cousin, former roommate of Prince Adam, because of you want to believe that, okay, well, then, you know, I guess you have that opinion to believe that Clawful is somehow related to Prince Adam because you saw some really bad I don't know, Yugoslavian mini-comic that depicted them as evil cousins, and no one knows about it except you. Okay, fine, whatever. Point being is that, look, it's, you know, whoever argues this, they need to be the ones trying to prove it, not the other way around.
Which, yeah, my example. No, you're right.
If you want to believe that Scareglow is the ghost of Skeletor because you just hold on to this little bit of information on the card art, then they need to be the ones trying to prove the majority wrong.
Oh, no, you're right, because that's what I agree. I mean, believe me, I'm open for believing different things if, like you said, we've proved...
This is not one of those things where, you know what, I can kind of see where they're coming from. No!
That's what I mean. And that's what I mean. You're right, because what we've given has been all the proof that it's not in any story did they ever say that this was Skeletor as a dead ghost. Now, if that would have been in a story, if Skeletor would have said, I am now going to summon from the future my dead spirit, and he is Scareglow, if that would have said something in a mini-comic, I'm like, okay, you got a point. But that has never happened. So until they show me that, no. Scareglow...
Even in the later years, when the 2000 X comic book was going on, the Power of Fear comic book that features Scareglow, if the people who put together that book, Val and Emiliano, then I think they didn't take to that either. You know, I think it's safe to say that, you know, no one has really bought the idea, past, present, and future, that Scareglow is somehow related to Skeletor in any form or fashion. It's bad wording. It would have been interesting at first, but there's too much information and stories out there, given how few times Scareglow has appeared, to verify that all it was just a miscommunication. Because as Joe said, there's no hints of him being Skeletor's ghost from the future or currently or anything related to Skeletor. Created an image because of the skull face, and that was just one story. That's it. He's depicted, you know, no differently in the He-Man magazine. I think it was like Ninja or Scareglow setting traps in Central Tower, I think.
They've always been teamed up. I like that. I always like seeing...
I like that, too. Not just because, you know, they came up, but you know what? That's a pair I can get behind. I can see them, you know, as a legitimate team-up. A ninja and a demonic ghost that feeds off fear. You know,
yeah,
it just, you know.
I didn't know if you remembered it, but that's what I got a kick out of in the one UK story where I told you where they were both brought in together. They played off of Scareglow as his toy gimmick, meaning what was cool is when he was in the dark, if the lights went out, Scareglow appeared. But if the lights came on during that comic and he was in any room with lights, he then disappeared. So it was like...
Is that the story though with him and Ninja
heading? Yeah.
Okay. All right. Correct me when I get it wrong there, but no. I maybe they weren't depicted in the He-Man magazine then.
You know what's funny is, damn, I couldn't remember if they popped up, if one of them did. I'll have to look back because I still thought Ninja was in one.
Up in the He-Man magazine comic strips. Maybe Scareglow did, but I think Ninja did.
That's what I said. I think Ninja. Oh, and I also want to say hello in the chat room to Justin Hune. Thank you for joining us. And also Wade Thurman, who was contacting us on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, he'll pop up here soon too, but want to give shout-outs to them as well. But, all right, well... I did want to say that's pretty much our discussion on Scareglow. Now
the people in the chat room, people in the chat room, everybody, if you all think that Scareglow is the ghost of Skeletor, tell us if you believe that. If not, then just help verify. We're not here to, you know, condemn people for their opinions. No. That's not what we're saying. But when people are saying they need to be convinced more, I'm like, well, you know, how many books of information to have to be thrown down to show you that, you know what?
There's quite a bit. Yeah, that's what I mean. Hell, is for an example, just get that World Compendium book and look up Scareglow on there. I'm sure nowhere in there you're going to see, and this is the World Compendium that is covered and taken all the origins of almost all the characters. You're not going to see anywhere about, hey, that's Skeletor's dead ghost. So that's not going to happen. Also, let me just say, What Geeks Do Network, they joined us in the chat room. So thank you for joining us. A very cool discussion. Appreciate that. But, yeah, so we do have a character profile on Oracle, but we're not going to go back-to-back with, like, talking about characters back-to-back. And, from What Geeks Do Network, it's No Job Rob. He just wanted to say he has never fought Scareglow with Skeletor. So there's that. Justin Hume said, nope, not Skeletor's ghost, but maybe Skeletor's ghost, if you know what I mean. He said, if you know what I mean. But let me see if anybody else said something. JSP, I can see where at first glance there'd be confusion. He said, I'm sure at first glance people may have thought it was just a new look for Skeletor, where it could be confusion. That's what we said. Correct. But all right, so Oracle, no, we're not going to talk about Oracle right yet. We're going to talk about a mini-comic. And you know what's funny? Unfortunately, in this mini-comic, that might bring up another debate of a certain character who's in this.
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, you bet your ass you do. And we're going to talk about Revenge of the Snake Men. So you started off, and yeah, we could talk about some of the characters that were in this and things that happened as well.
This mini-comic introduces my favorite of the Snake Men, Squeeze, along with Snake Face and Blast Attack. And to what Joe was hinting at is that there has been debate on who Blast Attack belongs to, which faction, the Evil Warriors or the Snake Men, or maybe some even believe he's his own character. But I think a lot of people, because of this mini-comic, he's depicted as a creation of King Hiss. And that's kind of what I've followed. He's appeared as a kind of a neutral slash evil warrior to Skeletor in Star Marvel Comics, I think issue number 9, along with Faker and Ninjor and Scareglow and Clanchamp are all featured in that comic book. But but to me the Star Marvel Comics are not the best example, because they also depict Squeeze as a member of the Horde in issue 9 or 10.
And he flies like Superman too. I always thought it was crazy the wrong character.
Scareglow flies like Superman.
Yeah, Scareglow. Yeah, he was flying like Superman. So I was like,
eh. Yeah, that's why I'm like, you know what? They were all over the place with that book. Not a whole lot of consistency with anything. But I just, even though he's not given the Snake Men emblem on the card art, I still feel like, you know, when he's introduced as a creation of King Hiss, I mean, you know, I guess it could be debated on whether or not Roboto is a creation of Man-at-Arms, because in Filmation, he's a robot from a different planet. But in 2000X and in various books and things like that and stories, he is a creation of Man-at-Arms. I think most people would agree that Roboto is a creation of Man-at-Arms as opposed to a space traveler. And with this, I feel that Blast Attack is a robot of the Snake Men. You know, much how Skeletor has his Faker robot, the Hordak has got Horde Troopers and various other creations, the Multibot and Mosquitor being cyborgs, robots, what have you. Why shouldn't King Hiss have his own, you know, suicidal bomber robot, you know?
That's true. First, let me just say hello to Luis Coronado in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. But, that's the thing, is whether they wrote Blast Attack into this mini comic as a quick little last minute thing, because yes, the card, he's, you know, actually sold as an evil warrior. It does not have the Snake Man logo on his card back.
That's the thing too. I don't necessarily buy that he's sold as an evil warrior, even though the Evil Warriors never had like a logo to say, hey, this is an evil warrior.
Well, I mean, I just meant, you know, it's because obviously since he didn't have the Snake Man thing, you could just say evil warrior. But no, I went by the mini comic first. Whether people could have got the Star Marvel comic first to see it or this, however it may be, the mini comics usually sunk in with most people because most people had mini comics more than the Star Marvel, because you look at the amount of figures that were made in comparison to the comic books, you know, the actual Star Marvel ones. But I see no issue with him being, I mean, I didn't have a problem with him being a Snake Man, because like you said, the Horde have their robots, Evil Warriors have their robots, even the Heroic Warriors have Roboto and they have theirs. So, yeah. I mean, what's wrong with the thought of, hey, the Snake Man could create a warrior that could explode, and not exploding to where he explodes and people are being blown to pieces in blood. He's more of like a concussion type bomb. He does the damage he needs, it can knock people out, but they're still going to be okay afterwards, because hell, he's even blown right up in front of the Snake Man.
Yeah.
So it's like he's just sitting there to do a little damage for the Snake Man to then come in and clean up, you know, because obviously they can't blow up themselves and suck themselves back together. Which, there was an interesting part, you know, there was one thing about this, like the cover of Revenge of the Snake Men. I don't know why, but I couldn't stand how they drew Snake Face on the cover. To me, he always looked like he had a mustache and reminded me of Man at Arms. For some reason, I hated how he looked on that cover. I was like,
I see what you're saying, even though I also see it's like the image of like the young lady and the old woman. Like you look at it a certain way, you see an old woman, the other way you see a young lady. This here looks like it's Snake Face with the decrepit droop, you know, saggy, scaly face. But yeah, it does look like Man at Arms' helmet with a mustache. Yeah, I see both there.
Because this, I mean, it's a good story. You know, they want to obviously kidnap, I believe, Queen Marlena in this story. And you'll see that, yes, the sorceress will impersonate Queen Marlena, and they think they have the queen, but they don't. But through this issue, there was just a couple things that... It's funny how things stick out in my mind. Because beyond Snake Face, there's a couple scenes when they draw King Hiss later in that comic. And when he's like lunging forward to attack, his face even looks white and gray, and he looks like Snake Face. I was like, that's King Hiss. Why is he drawing white and gray faced in these couple panels? I don't know if the artist forgot to color it in, but when I looked at it, I felt like, wait, is that Snake Face? I was like, wait, no, Snake Face is there. I was like, wait, what happened? Because he doesn't look like King Hiss. You'd have to see it later in the issue. I don't know if you know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's just the coloring error, that nothing more. I don't. You know, it goes back to mistakes that were made as this line has progressed. They happen all over the place, whether something like this, a description is misinterpreted. You've got characters for different factions that clearly are wrong. But it's just kind of one of those things I just embrace. Is part of the charm of this line is that there are, you know, simple little mistakes here and there, and this is just...
we even get squeezed in this. Remember being referred to as Tanglor. You get to hear him being called Tanglor in this.
Same, yeah, Tanglor. Just like Cyclones was a tornado.
Yeah,
and it's mentioned once in the Spike or Strikes mini comics. So, when as a child in 1987, you pick up Squeeze and you see him in this mini comic depicted as Tanglor. It's another prime example of the constant improvisation and constant changing of this toy line that. You know, it's that to me, it's one of the most fascinating things about this property is all the changes that were being made up at the 11th hour, you know?
Yeah, and pretty much people in the chat room, Christopher Dahlberg, Daniel Maynor, Luis Coronado, they pretty much say, yeah, Last Attack is a member of the Snake Man. So that's cool. I like that. That's how it is for me, too.
I appreciate that support there because, you know, he is.
Yeah. No, he is. I mean, that's how I've always seen him. Never seen him any different. But yes, so. This is where you get to see Snake Face, and obviously Snake Face is turning everybody into stone, which even at the end, it kind of like, you know, backfires on him after he turns all of his fellow Snake Men into stone. Then we get the basic Clash of the Titans move where He-Man puts a shield to show the reflection, and bam, then Snake Face is turned to stone. And you find out also in this, because Extendar's in here too, like I said, when we do the comic discussion, we don't read it page by page and everything, because we still, you know, well, once you guys did enjoy it, you know, we don't want to spoil it in case you didn't see it. So me and Tyler do little, you know, basically wrapping up certain parts so you can still do it, just in case. But, so Extendar's in here too. There was a certain panel that cracked me up. I think it's when Squeeze was holding Extendar, and Snake Face yells to Squeeze, "Look away!" because he's gonna, you know, use this, you know, expression to turn Extendar to stone. And I was thinking, well, okay, Extendar, you just heard him say that. Why don't you look away too? Because he turns Extendar to stone, and then Squeeze says, "Thanks for the warning," or something. I'm like, yeah, because Extendar is too stupid to realize. Did you hear what he just said? Look the other way. That always killed me as a kid.
There is no, you know, disastrous story going on. If we have the heroes just, oh, okay.
It just killed me. As a kid, it really did drive me nuts, because it's like I felt like I was watching one of those episodes of a cartoon or a movie where you're yelling at the screen. You know how you've done that before, like, look out, move, don't fall in the hole.
No, I do not do that, because I enjoy the heroes being put in a dangerous situation, so that way when they make their big comeback, it's epic and it's powerful.
I wish I could change it. Like, I was watching movies, like, please turn the other way. It used to drive me nuts because I loved Extendar so much as a kid. I hated that he sat there and got frozen, you know, and turned to stone. I was like, damn it, why didn't you turn?
You know, Then he's fighting Squeeze. If Squeeze is even depicted on his card, it's taking like Xandar, Rio Blast, and Snout Spout at the same time.
He's a moron.
I'm sure that this guy has got Xandar in such a struggle here that he's not thinking about, oh dear God, I'm being, you know, turned to stone. Like, you know, is you just don't get proper storytelling, do you at all, Joe?
I don't, not at all. So that part did kill me. It killed me as a kid. But one thing I liked, now...
Are you home, like, Indian style in front of your TV and going, ho, 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 you've done it again there.
You know? There you go. No, now this is, shut up. Well, there's one thing that I liked in this comic. This could be me maybe not seeing something properly.
That's a stretch.
Isn't that a stretch? Yeah, shit. Well, anyways, I always seen something in this comic, and I thought it was a little nod to something that happened earlier in the comic, but maybe I wasn't seeing it properly. It was when they were bringing Queen Marlena's, you know, stone body. Of course, it's a sorceress. But when Rat-Lore and Cobra Khan were bringing her to King Hiss, it looks like Cobra Khan has his arm, like, in a strap, like he has a broken arm, and it's, like, wrapped in a red bandage. And I thought earlier, when Blast Attack did his concussion bomb and knocked all the Snake Men away by accident, they're all, like, hurting and laying down. Is that just me, or do you see... It looks like it's in a sling. It looks like his arm's in a sling. And
I don't think Cobra Khan's in this, man.
Who's the green sucker that...
Tongue Lasher colored green.
Well, that's the thing. You had Rat-Lore too.
Yes, Tongue Lasher. Look. I mean, look. I got multiple pictures. Look on towards the very end when He-Man crashes into.
Hold on, though. Tyler, feel this real quick. You know that Tongue Lasher, who do you think is next to? You said you think that's Tongue Lasher.
I'm looking in the big book here, the Dark Horse book here.
Okay, you're looking at page 5, correct? Because the thing is, he's got furry trunks, and it just looks he's green.
The second page here, when he's being brought in with Rat-Lore, that's clearly Tongue Lasher. The shape of his face, the shape of his feet, you know, and then of course I'm looking at. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Page 8. When they're all around King Hiss sitting on his throne, all having goblets of wine, there's Tongue Lasher, colored green, right next to Rat-Lore. You see Squeeze's arm, Snake faces.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, whether it's Tongue Lasher or Cobra Khan, whoever it was that was green, listen.
Are we going to have another debate over this, too?
No.
Debates over mistakes.
Listen, well, no, okay, Tongue Lasher, Rat-Lore, Tongue Lasher or Cobra Khan Green, all I'm saying is that a sling he's got his arm in? Because that's what I thought was kind of cool.
What are you looking at?
Page 5, where he's standing right next to Queen Marlena and Stone.
There is page 5. I'm using the book.
The big book? Look, page 5 of the big book. Look, I got it too. The big monster.
Page 5 of the... Wait, hold it right there. Okay. That's Tongue Lasher.
Okay, but I'm saying, isn't his arm in a sling?
Yes, his arm in the sling. Yes. Great eye.
Oh, you sucker. That's all I want to say, because he didn't have it nowhere else then.
You're making all this sting because you, it's Tongue Lasher with his arm in a sling?
Well, I thought it was funny because you didn't see it anywhere else in the book, so I thought they did it as a quick little funny nod of getting injured earlier. It's like, what the hell just happened? Everybody's in the chat. I'm like, what is going on? So that's all I was saying. Was he had his arm in a sling, and I didn't know if anybody noticed that. So that.
Yes.
Tyler's like, what the hell?
Anybody ever see that movie Scanners?
Yeah. I was like, how did we turn me just talking about the character with his arm in a sling to, oh, okay, I meant, okay, Tongue Lasher instead of Cobra Khan or whatever. It's like, who cares who? I just meant, did you see the sling? I think I'm going to choke myself with this scarf. I think that's what I'm going to do. Or I'm going to put it in sling.
Good couple of 3 or 4, 40 times and just hang it up there and just, you know, it'll be like an airplane. When I'm done talking, I look over ahead of me and I see like Joe's feet just kind of dangling in front of me.
There you go. So, and welcome Adam Gabbard in the chat room. Good to see you too. I don't know what Luis Coronado said, but he retracted one of his message or something. So I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe he thought we were insane. But
Well, yeah, that's that saying.
But anyways, no, He-Man in this comic, his power sword is enough to break that spell of having himself turned to stone, and he just puts it right on Extendar and breaks his spell. So there's nothing basically that I guess can, at least from this canon of this comic, would be able to turn them back to normal.
Well,
so
you had to come up with something, because when you have a character as powerful as Snakeface, who is a male Medusa, you know, that's an extremely powerful character. And I almost feel like the character is never used properly because he is so powerful that it's almost like he kind of is a victim of his own power, you know. And that's obviously what they do is, you know, just like in 2000X, the character was immediately just kind of taken out of the story at the beginning, or, you know, halfway through the second episode, and he's never seen again.
Yeah, because that's what I liked is He-Man didn't, you know, like, he could have freed all the Snake Men from their stone prison, but he was like, he's going to make them, like, wait a while, like, let them stay in their frozen stone state, and maybe he'll get to them later. That's what I thought was cool, was it even affects them to where they can't break it, including the person who did it himself, Snakeface. He's stuck in that form until He-Man decides to, you know, unstone them, whatever the word would be.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, you know, that, you know, I that's a Snake Man, I feel like, that clearly needs to be used a lot more in a much more efficient way. Like, I would almost feel like, even though that's what the character does, that you would want to save the turning his victims to stone from a much more bigger, impactful moments, instead of, you know, constantly coming out and squashing. Almost like a professional wrestler that comes out and squashes his opponents real fast, and then the match is over. Like, where's the excitement? Where's the build-up for something intriguing? Like, you're waiting for Snakeface to pull out this big finisher, but he does it at the beginning of the match. You're like, well, that's cool for a little bit, but then you kind of want to see a little bit more to the match, as opposed to coming in, squash, 1, 2, 3, boom, it's over, head back to the curtains.
And, yeah, because he can be too... Yeah, it's almost like he's too deadly. I loved him, though.
I love the character, and I would like to see him more, but I feel like he's always taken out immediately because, just hold the, you know, the mirror.
How powerful he is. I know, I hate
it sucks, you know.
Yeah, I always hate the mirror thing, too, to knock him out, because I always thought, man, this is, to me, I mean, he always was my favorite Snake Man when I was playing with that toy. I love that gimmick. I mean, I love Clash of the Titans also, but I always thought, bam, I used to act like he was freezing everybody and turning them into stone. But you're right, it's like he's so powerful, then they always have to, like, find a way, well, let's get rid of him, let's have him see his reflection, because otherwise he's going to turn everybody to stone. But, man, I wanted him to appear along with the Snake Man in the Filmation cartoon so badly. Man, that's why I wish that, you know, Filmation could have had another season of He-Man. I would have loved to have seen all the Snake Men popping up there as their own faction,
Just like some of the others, man, I don't think he'd have been given proper treatment. I mean, if Spike Orton, Too Bad, and Tongue Lasher weren't treated with, like, the best, you know, depictions, Snake Face, as deadly as he is, he'd have been portrayed pretty poorly, I think.
You think He-Man probably been using his sword a lot to show the reflection back to him or something? Like, he would have did that, and He-Man would be like, He-Man, and then bam, just reflected.
I almost feel like he probably would have been a character who would have been used once, and that was it. Kind of like Jitsu, you know, where he's got one prominent appearance in an episode, like, or one episode that he has a prominent spot in. And, of course, he's taken out with his own reflection, and that's the last you see of him, which kind of like what they did in 2000X, where he's introduced as very powerful and turning all the evil warriors to stone. Second episode, He-Man, you know, confronts him, holds the shield up, or the reflection, the sword, excuse me, and turns him to stone. He's out of action, and you see him in the attorney in prison in, you know, in later episodes. Sucks for Snakeface fans, because he got used and taken out pretty quick.
Yeah, I hated that he got dismissed just like that, because, man, you seen he was so powerful, and like you said, he had Merman turn to stone, and then you seen when Merman got shattered, and that's when the whole world was like...
When I thought that was the character that was going to die, like, because they said someone is going to die in season two, and I thought it was Merman. I'm like, oh my god, like, Merman's dead. I thought that was so ballsy, and then the second episode, they bring him back to life, like, man! You know? Just like, dude, you know, don't, if you're going to do it, do it. Don't have, you know, don't wimp out and decide, oh, well, you know, we're actually not going to kill him off. You know, it's like a bad wrestling storyline, you know.
It was shocking, though. I mean, that was. the thought of Merman being killed was very shocking. And then, like you said, the way he's brought back. But what I liked, the one thing I did like about how it was done, was it was showing how powerful and bad Skeletor was, like with the snap of his fingers or whatever he did. He, like, brought Merman back like nothing.
That undermines the impression of the Snake Men, though. Like, you introduce them, then you have to maintain that same level of villain. You can't have them undermined like that when they come in and, you know, wipe out the Evil Warriors really quickly. Okay, you establish them as an even bigger threat than the Evil Warriors. You have to stick with that. You cannot come in and just like with... I've always associated Rise of the Snake Men Part 1 and 2 as bad or a good and bad execution of a wrestling heel. You come in, you have a wrestling heel that comes in, squashes, and devastates his opponents, and then will beat like an upper mid card guy with, like, you know, in a good match, but somehow he subdues and takes him out. But then you've got Super Saiyan that comes in, squashes him, doesn't sell any of the moves or anything like that, and then boom, the heel is finished. How do you take the heel seriously now, when everything that built him up so good has just been crushed and squashed by Super Cena? You know, it's prime examples when Mark Mero got body slammed or power bombed by Sable, and Stone Cold Steve Austin sees him, like, how the hell am I supposed to have a legitimate match with this guy when he's being power bombed by a woman? You know, logically, he's not going to be a threat to me. I can't main event with this guy. You've ruined it. Yeah, so right. I see that. You know, well, that's we've done that discussion.
Yeah. That's a whole other discussion. Yeah, wrestling has that whole bunch. Wanted to say one thing. Jackie Miller said something on a side note in the chat room. Said, on a funny note, the Family Guy mobile game has unlockable Masters of the Universe characters. She-Ra was last week, He-Man this week. So, well, that's kind of cool, Jackie. Thanks for letting me know. I get a kick out of Family Guy. I know they had a mobile game, but for those listening, if you have the Family Guy mobile game, at least you know there's unlockable characters. I'm going to check that out, or you have to screenshot it. I always get intrigued by seeing stuff like that, especially seeing how Family Guy has done a lot of things with He-Man in its episodes. I know Tyler hates Family Guy, but I like my Family Guy. So
then I got burnt out on it. I just felt like the cartoon didn't hold up for a second viewing when I would go back and rewatch the episodes, and I just got sick of it. I get sick of the singing and dancing, and, like, I appreciate all the throwbacks to the 80s and cartoons they would do, but just got to where, like, they would find one bad joke and drag it out, like, God, this is not funny anymore, so... No, I don't watch it, but I don't denounce people who like it because it has a humongous fan following. I'm more partial to South Park, so.
All right, and also in the chat room, Adam Gabbard said, you, Tyler, are awesome for what you know about He-Man and She-Ra. So, there you go. You got a compliment.
Saying that, bud.
Yeah, of course he says, I'm a moron. Everybody in the chat room said, Joe sucks, though. Well, thanks a lot, everyone. Well, at least I got my good fan.
Picking that up, or is that true?
No. Well, at least I got Alex Rice. Good kid, he's a super fan of Mojo Lock, so that's a good kid right there. So that's my number one fan.
But I have a question, Joe. Are people saying you're stupid and I'm smart?
Well, no, they actually didn't call me stupid, but they did say, no, Adam gave you a compliment in the chat room, so that was cool of him. I don't think that about you, though, but whatever. But, yeah, so, no, this is a great...
You're a heel.
I'm a heel. I somehow became the heel on the show, and I don't even know how.
He beats me every week when we all know I squash him on every episode, but he comes back the next week. Oh, Tyler didn't beat me. I mean, Joe Ric Flair of podcasting.
I'm always trying that double axe handle off the top rope. That never happens. I get caught and I get thrown down. I go up every single time. But, and thank you, What Geeks Networks do in the chat room said, Joe, you rock, said you both rock. So, yeah, we appreciate the compliment. Revenge of the Snake Men. It is a good comic if you haven't read it. Now, you can find it online somewhere if you've never seen it.
I like seeing He-Man taking the battle tram. I always like seeing that being used. It was just like it was fun to sit there and make it sound like, you know, faster transportation across this big, massive, you know, playset or battleground. You use the battle tram to get you there faster as opposed to leaving Grayskull Tower and going on foot. It was just fun to think that He-Man's got to run to Central Tower and catch the battle tram there. And then take it over to Viper Tower. I just love seeing use of the battle tram,
which we also
in battles and stuff like that.
Yeah, because this was one where, I mean, you got a taste of, you know, the Attorney of the Towers. You got Grayskull Tower, Viper Tower, but yeah, this one I don't
at all in this at all. Yeah. Like that, was pretty cool. Everything is like you get to see a little bit more of the interior of Grayskull Tower. imagination shows you is it being a lot bigger. Plus, we get to see snippets of Stridors outside Grayskull Tower too.
That was cool. But I think the only one that wasn't really depicted in the inside this time was Central Tower. Correct? They didn't really give any coverage of that.
No. Everything is Viper Tower and Grayskull Tower, which is pretty interesting considering Central Tower is pretty much where all the big battles take place. But in this, you know, the Snake Men have taken refuge in, you know, which is not necessarily, you almost would want to say would have been their original home or was Snake Mountain since they were kind of buried, or King Hiss was buried down, you know, deep within Snake
Mountain. Yeah, he would definitely know about Viper Tower, yeah.
Yeah, whereas it's like almost during that time that was kind of like their headquarters, then maybe they kind of, you know, or it's like a temporary, hell, I don't know. I feel like that's we could always go back and discuss again the Attorney of the Three Towers. Like, I just felt like there was so much more to be discussed than what we did before.
Yeah, I love seeing him anytime it popped up. Anytime it was referenced, because that's just my favorite playset of all time. So I love anytime Eternia was referenced in any of these comics.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's just goes to show you just how vast and rich this is. I mean, you could have, I mean, there's been so many endless stories about Grayskull and Snake Mountain. And you could have just as many about fighting over the Eternia Three Towers. I mean, from Chaos going in Grayskull Tower, Chaos and Central, Chaos.
You know what I'll tell you what I don't remember ever seeing, and I could absolutely be wrong, is I don't think anything with the moat in front of Central Tower was ever really shown. Meaning, yeah, because we know it's the place that, bam, the arms can grab you, the jaws can lock down, but there's that moat that surrounds Eternia, the Central Tower, and as a kid, I loved taking those cans of slime from the slime pit and filling my moat up with slime and having the warriors get stuck and, like, creatures were supposed to be coming out and grabbing. I had such a blast with that moat, and it's a shame. Yeah, I don't think I've seen anything about the moat.
No, that's the part. It's a shame that it wasn't used, and I figured if it was going to be used at all, it would have been in the Ultimate Battleground minicomic where they really tried to depict the big features of it. But since the moat was just kind of like a visual as opposed to an actual action feature.
Did you ever see what the moat looks like, you know, when it's nothing in there? Did you ever see that for Central Tower?
It's so hard to find actual shots of everything about Central Tower. I know I looked at it on He-Man.org and seen a couple of good shots of it, but it's like bones, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I should take some good pictures. You see bones, there's even like, it looks like, you know, like a grate, like there could be an underground area. You see weapons. It like looks like it's remnants of lost battles and warriors and souls and things. It's like, it could be a disgusting thing of what could exist in that. So I would love to just see if Central Tower ever came back and they just, you know, did a story where they showed something happen with that. I'd just like to see fallen warriors or something attacking, and there's a crazy moat creature that they had to battle by trying to get past.
Yeah, I would love to know that there would be, you know, some sort of, you know, because, you know, when you think of moat, you think of some sort of monster residing down in the, you know, kind of sludge moat, you know, that wants to grab people and take them, pull them down and eat them and stuff like that. So it's, there's so much you could do story-wise with the Three Towers, man. And it's like we said last week with the Giants and Pre-Eternia. So many great ideas that have unfortunately not been utilized to their full potential. And that just keeps me and Joe going here, like ideas and stuff. And, you know.
Yeah, just theories. It's always fun.
God willing, you know, someone will come along and decide, you know what, we're going to revitalize and revolutionize this property and make more and more great stories with beautiful artwork and not have an agenda and come up with creative characters because, you know, I want my character in here and stuff like that and force them on people, Sir Laser-a-Lot. I hope one day we get to see a lot more done with Central Tower.
It'd be great. So, well, that's our discussion on that, which was a cool side rant. But now we're going to discuss a character which I get so mad when people put him down. And this is how some people refer in certain groups, which annoys me. They say that Orko is the Scrappy-Doo and Snarf of Masters of the Universe. And even those characters I love. It's like, why are you putting down Snarf? Why are you putting down Scrappy-Doo? But they say Orko is just kind of, he's a joke. He's for kids. He's worthless. Why do they have him? I never liked him. I loved Orko, but I'll pass it to you, and then we can discuss Orko and a lot of his different interpretations through different cartoons and of course, comics and stuff. Maybe his powers, his look, whatever it may be.
I'm gonna make this very clear here. Every I mean, the vast majority of the flagship characters of He-Man, especially in the cartoon, since Orko was really prominent in the cartoon. I think most people will just kind of associate him with the cartoon, even though he showed up in a lot more canons and media. You know, from He-Man to Teela to Skeletor to Beastman to Evil-Lyn, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, Trapjaw, Triclops. All these prominent characters have been depicted poorly at some form or another in the Filmation cartoon. You know, there's episodes where Skeletor is portrayed as a complete bumbling idiot. You know, but you've got other episodes where he comes off as the ultimate alpha male of villainy. And Orko is no exception to that. You know, Orko, when written properly and correctly and treated with dignity, is a very important, very likable, lovable, and enjoyable character that deserves to be in that inner circle of people who know Prince Adam's secret identity. You know, I always go to Disappearing Act. That is a prime example of an episode that I've talked to with Joe before. It never gets discussed a lot. We will do a commentary for it someday or an episode discussion. Just how, you know, good-hearted and likable Orko is in that episode of feeling awful for doing what he did in accidentally not taking Prince Adam's sword and transporting it back to Eternity's past by accident with his, you know, magic spell that got out of control. He genuinely feels bad. He's depicted as, you know, just, I don't know, it comes off as very whole and genuine, the way he's depicted in that. You know, his portrayal in Diamond Red Disappearance, Dawn of Dragoon, you know, Disappearing Dragons, where he comes in contact with Grandmere for the first time. There's so many great examples of Orko being portrayed as a very cool character. And if people are going to sit there and say the cliche, oh, he's depicted as silly and obnoxious with no examples, because, like with so many things, you just go along with what everybody else is saying in this group. Oh, well, this group, oh, they all think Orko's silly and stupid, just like Snarf and Scrappy-Doo and whatever. I'm like, okay, do you have some examples of what you mean by that? Well, you know, maybe he was kind of like the kid getting in trouble and stuff, so you have no examples. No, not really. I'm just kind of saying what everyone else is saying because, you know, I'm lazy about that. You know, every character has been portrayed not to the best. Orko is just like that as well. But that's why I get so mad when I see Skeletor being depicted as this, meh. You know, like, what the hell does that mean?
Which I've never heard in the cartoon.
I saw it on Facebook the other day. Someone shared a picture of Skeletor posing and with the caption, meh. You know,
and that's the thing I bring up. I always say, give me an example when he's actually said M-Y-A-H and said meow. I was like, I don't think I've ever heard that in the Filmation cartoon ever.
Anywhere. I don't know where the hell, you know, some hipster guy thought it was cute and funny to sit there and slap this caption, because that's probably what in his mind
he said
all the time in the He-Man cartoon. Oh, it's really funny, man. Hey, man, pass that over. And he takes a big hit of that, and you know, we're going to put it on posters and t-shirts. It'd be great, man. You know, he takes another hit of it, too. And,
sure the heck caught on. That's the sad thing. That caught on and makes Skeletor into this goofy joke time, too.
On the internet, anywhere, on Google or Facebook or Twitter or something, not see Skeletor being depicted in a very, you know, silly manner with that caption. And then you've got your general audience, oh, man, yeah, this is funny, man. He's a stupid skeleton villain from that cartoon from the 80s with the guy with the furry trunks. And,
you know, just to talk about Orko, then, I mean, to kind of go back to Orko.
Yes, let's not get off track here.
Well, I was going to say, at least for one thing, I think there's more love for Orko, because right here in the chat room, you know, Jackie Miller and Christopher Dahlberg, and a lot of people are saying, yeah, they loved Orko. I think the consensus is that people do like him. And I guess one of my big examples is, you know, you think about the 87 movie. Orko wasn't in that. We got Gwildor, so, you know, they couldn't do what they wanted to give us Orko back then. But the thing is, that's what you hear from a lot of people. They're always like, man, I loved Orko. It would have been nice to see him in the movie. So it shows that people do love the character. There are some people that focus on, like you said, oh, he had a bucket of water fall on Man-at-Arms and eggs, and they want to think that he's just bumbling and worthless. Now, we know they had to obviously they dumbed down his magic abilities. Like, he came to Eternia and apparently his magic doesn't work right, but on Tralla, he's the most powerful Trallan wizard, they said, and his, you know, magic works great, and he's super powerful. It's like when we talked last week when we were talking about Montork. Montork came here, and his magic, he could still control it. So maybe it isn't as much as it being really messed up, just maybe with Montork's age and time to craft his magic, he's had more time to perfect it. So when he had his change to a different world and came to Eternia, he could still control his magic, which makes you think, within time, I'm sure Orko could have did that on his other planets too, but I always wondered, see, I wished it could have been more, because, you know, I loved watching Evil-Lyn, you know, do her magic spells. You like seeing Skeletor do it, and it was cool with the sorceress, but I've always said the sorceress is limited to Castle Grayskull. So the heroic warriors have nobody that's a magic user except Orko. And I was like, I always wanted more things for him to do, but then that wouldn't have gave us a lot of situations that you see where, you know, people are in a pickle, you know, and of course Orko maybe could have did something to really prevent things from happening, but then you wouldn't get, like you said, a lot of the stories and situations.
Given that, with the proper writing, Creatures from the Tar Swamp's a prime example of that. There's not an example or time in that episode where he's depicted as a lame court gesture.
When he got his amulet back from the back of that creature, the one that had his power? That
episode is just depicted as Orko is a very strong, prominent character who becomes fixated with a beautiful woman, which, you know, as a young boy watching that, I am too.
No,
I get it, Orko, when you're being rejected by a woman to your face.
And real quick, though, that is the one where he got his amulet back, right? The one that he lost when he came to Eternia? The
Tar Swamp where he used to help rescue Adam and Cringer. It is stuck on the track back.
Yeah, so that was, like, one thing that was supposed to be giving him his magic back, because that's what he had, and then he controlled his magic better. And, well, yeah, I mean, no, I did like that. And then when it came around to when MYP was, for some reason, the voice of that Orko annoyed me, because it sounded like it was for me. I was like, man, he reminds me of Urkel. It was like, it reminded me of Urkel, and it just seemed like then they might have hammed him up of purposely messing up more.
The Mike Young production, they didn't know how to write Orko. It's like they were trying to copy what they did in Filmation, but they just still made him, you know, not a very likable character. The voice acting was very obnoxious. It wasn't flattering to the character. Now, not that every episode depicted Orko as, but it's overall, it was not as likable as the Filmation depiction. And, you know, granted, when the 2002 cartoon came out, I had just gotten around to seeing, you know, the rest of the He-Man episodes I had never seen. And I'm still looking at Filmation Orko. I'm like, you know, God, they did a really good job with him in certain episodes. And I watched 2000X. I'm like, man, you know, I like the character, like the new look and everything, but he's just not that likable. He just comes off as more obnoxious because of the voice. The voice comes off as very whiny and high-pitched and just not... And he's not given a whole lot of redeeming stories, you know, where, yes, he is the court jester. Let's put it out there. He is not initially depicted as this great, powerful wizard. That comes along with Filmation's writing of trying to flesh out the character. Robbie London's the one that did that too, where in Dawn of Dragoon, where he decides, you know what, back in Tralla, Orko's magic is a lot stronger. Here in Eternia, it's not as strong. It does work. However, I do feel like that's just a plot device to kind of amp up the dangers or to kind of build up Orko's big epic moments when it doesn't work, but somehow it works more at the end or in this episode. It's just better if this writer writes it as Orko has, you know, stronger magic in this episode. Like in Orko's Missing Magic, where his magic gets trapped inside the Gronk and it ends up on Omiro. Orko can't do magic at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's all plot device. Obviously, when Joe had just mentioned too, with Montor showing up on Eternia, there's no mention that a Trollin who ends up on Eternia, their magic suffers. It strictly comes off as something that was written for Orko. And that if you want to carry that on, you can. But there's not enough continuity from characters from Tralla. Like, Driel shows up. There's no mention Driel's return that when she comes to help Orko stop Clawful and Trapjaw, that there's no mention that her magic or Orca's magic are weakened in this episode either. You know, it's strictly just, you know, the constant changing of the writing in every episode. Every writer's got an idea of how Orca should be depicted.
Yeah, because you're absolutely right. And that's why I wish that, you know, with, again, hypotheticals, if a cartoon never came back or however they bring Orca back, I pray that they wouldn't do, like you said, with MYP did. MYP did, I think, what they think fans thought of Orca, of being bumbling and goofy and maybe just that annoying little character, and went a little too far with it. I want to see Orca, whenever he comes back, what the hell is wrong with just having a cool little flying magician? That's powerful. He's a magician. Let him do stuff. Let him have time to shine. Don't have him be somebody that's just like there for the kids. Let him be a cool magician. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I like that. Let him have a battle with Evil Ann. How bizarre would that be to see? It'd be cool to see her using her power, Orko using his magic. Just because he's little doesn't mean he's not powerful. Let him show. Let him be a bad character. You know what I mean? That's what I'd love to see.
Yeah. I mean, I really like him to have been written in a new cartoon or whatever. Is a very likable character. Not obnoxious, but you like what he has to say. You appreciate, like, I mean, obviously he's also someone that Adam can confide in with Orca, because Orca is aware of his secret identity. So Orca is in that small circle of the importance of what He-Man really means. And that's what makes it so much more interesting, is that the character that you would least likely think would know about the identity of He-Man and Adam is Orca. And he understands the severities of that, you know, or just, you know, it's...
Well, think of that. Think of, okay, in MYP, they tried to give us a reason of, you know, how Orko is one of the people that knows the secret.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm getting at. They kind of made it look like, oh, it was an accident. Well, I guess he knows now, and make sure you keep it a secret. But when you think back when you were a kid watching Filmation, they never explained, so you can almost wonder, you know, what was so special about Orko that he was given this very special secret that only Man-at-Arms and, you know, only this, you know, Sorceress knows? Like, what was so special about Orko? Like, you'd figure, you know, you wouldn't give that to somebody that you wouldn't have any confidence in, to where you'd think, oh, if I tell him, he might tell somebody else. You figure he's important enough to know this very powerful secret that only two other people would know. You know what I mean? That's what makes Orko seem like he's a very special character, to be given that, you know, that honor of knowing He-Man, Prince Adam's secret identity.
Plus, when you look at, and MYP did pay homage to this, you know, with Larry Dottilio's Lessons episode, but you look at Creatures of the Tar Swamp, he's brought Orko's transport to Eternity when Adam is a boy. So, and he's trapped there. So naturally, Adam and Orko grow up together. You know, Orko obviously doesn't seem like he ages much. Almost like Krallin ages a lot, like Yoda. You know, it's just they just have a longer lifespan. Whereas Adam is growing up, and Orko, they almost kind of feel like they're kind of the same age. You almost feel like, maybe to a certain extent, because Orko shows it very confident in Creatures in the Tar Swamp, like he's a very experienced wizard / magician in that. But they have grown up together, so
Maybe his year, he's like, he ages 1 year in comparison to everybody else aging 20 years. Maybe that could be a trial and, you know, connection. Yeah.
I just picture, you know, the Uncle Montark has been around. He's seen a whole lot, probably even not as old as like living during the pre-Eternia days, but probably not too long after that age on Eternia has come and gone. The three tires have been sunk. The dinosaurs are gone. Hero has passed away. The snake men have been buried. But in Tralla, you could picture him as being a very young, kind of Orko's age at that time. You know, that Uncle Montark has seen a whole lot, whereas Montark, I'm getting my Trallans mixed up here. Point being is that I picture that the Trallans age a lot slower as opposed to humans. But knowing that Adam and Orko have grown up together, I imagine they were good buddies, because Orko does like to have fun and relax and goof off like Adam does.
Oh, one quick thing, Tyler.
Go ahead.
Because I, like I said, I can't remember every single episode that things happen. Like I said, I've watched them all, but I can't memorize them all. But Grimbot brought up a good example in the chat room, said, you know, like, who says that, you know, the secret, you know, that he was given the honor of knowing the secret, he said he likely saw Adam transform purely by sheer accident. Did that happen in the cartoon? Is that maybe how it could have happened?
No, and the cartoon is always depicted as that from the very beginning, Orko is in, I mean, it's in the opening sequence.
I mean, I didn't know about in a flashback, like how you talk about some of the flashback things when he was a kid or something, anything.
No. It's never shown, you know, how Orko came across, and I don't recall it ever being mentioned on how either.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's like they say in the chat room, speculation. I mean, yeah, we're just theorizing. I mean, hell, he could have been given the honor. Right. Oh, there was a slight delay. No, you're right. I mean, he could have seen it, you know, by accident, or he could have just been given the honor, but no.
And I feel like, you know, just because Orko is written as the comic relief of the show, that he just kind of falls into stuff. Like, no. I think Orko's been portrayed, you know, very competent and very serious a lot of the time, aside from the gags they do give him on the show, enough to where, like, I could buy the idea that when Adam is given the responsibility on his 18th birthday to become He-Man, that Man-at-Arms and, you know, Orko, you know, Adam probably even says, you know, Orko, you can come with me, you know, about I've been summoned to this mysterious castle with Man-at-Arms. You can come with me. Man-at-Arms being completely against it or whatever, but Adam insists on Orko coming along because they've grown up together. He confides in Orko. You know, growing up as a prince, he doesn't care for the whole royalty lifestyle except for, you know, hitting on and flirting with women. So I'd imagine him and Orko have a lot of guy talk.
Sure. So I can see Orko
genuinely, naturally being someone that Adam would confide in. Look, I've been given this tremendous responsibility that someone he also talked to Man-at-Arms about, because Man-at-Arms also can be written as a very stoic and wise character. Prince Adam No More is a prime example of that. So I'd like to think of Orko as being someone who was very competent enough and thought of enough by Prince Adam that he either shares it when the responsibility is given to him, or he is brought with him to Grayskull when the sorceress hands him over the Sword of Power and says, you have now been given this tremendous responsibility.
Which would be nice. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I agree. I mean, it'd be nice. In my mind, I'd like to think that, yes, it was, you know, Adam confiding in him, or he was just given the honor of knowing it. But no, I absolutely agree. But, you know, you're right. It's just theories. And like you said, likely. It's not like Grimbot was saying that happened, but it's good. I mean, I like
what we're doing. Speculating and showing theories too. There is concrete evidence, and frankly, I like it better like that. It's more fun for all of us as fans to come up with our own theories,
right?
As opposed to someone deciding, oh, you know what, this has never been explained. Well, by God, here you are. I've explained.
Exactly. Like when me and Tyler are saying this, we're absolutely not saying just agree with what we say. I love hearing all theories. That's what's great, because it just makes you use your imagination when there's something you didn't have. It's fun. It's fun, like I said, just to speculate and just think, how could something have come to be? So Orko, like I said, to me, though, you know, to wrap up with the Orko discussion, I never thought of him as a worthless character, a bumbling character, or a character that didn't have a place in Masters of the Universe. I've always thought that he was a fantastic character. He was enjoyable for me. I liked him as a toy. I liked him in the cartoons, not as much in MYP. And he appeared in quite a few comics and other, you know, forms of media, books and things. So he's been in a lot, but no, Orko to me has never been bumbling, worthless, and I've always liked Orko.
Yeah, I do too. I to me, he's just as important as Battle Cat is. Orko is a staple of Masters of the Universe mythology. I don't care for people who want to subscribe to this first four mini comics and said, all right, well, you can believe that too. But to me, Orko is just as important as the Power Sword and Grayskull are to the mythology. Like, you have to have Orko. He has got to be there as He-Man's buddy, or Adam's buddy, He-Man's buddy, someone that, you know, that they fight battles together. They talk to each other. It's not always business with just Adam and Man-at-Arms. Like, you feel like Orko can be a little bit more laxed when Adam needs to confide in or talk to somebody, you know, that's not someone who's in a position of authority in the royal court, from his parents to Man-at-Arms.
Well, okay, Dad, one other quick thing.
What are you laughing? What did I say that was so funny?
Not you. It's in the chat room, which was being said. I was just going to bring it up, but Christopher Dahlberg said, oh, Jesus, would you just answer somebody's question? I didn't get to it, but Adam Gabbert is in the chat room, has been saying, do you remember the commercial bumpers? Yes, where Orko would say, you know, He-Man and the Master of the Universe will be back after these messages. And then he'd come back and say, now back to He-Man. And yeah. I do miss that those were not put in the DVD. I don't think they were in the DVDs, were they?
No, they weren't, unfortunately. No, they're on YouTube to view for your viewing pleasure. I think all of them are. And I don't remember if James Etalk has put together like a compilation of the commercial bumpers or not. But they're pretty easy to find on YouTube. I mean, the one where he's spinning around, the one where he tears with the paper
and takes it back up.
You know, yeah, there's several of them. So if you just want to find them, they're on YouTube.
Yeah, just type Orko bumpers, and I think that's all you need to do on YouTube, and it'll pop up, because a lot of people probably forgot about them. Maybe some people never even seen them, but I do like the bumpers. I remember that every time. I always remember I'd be in the other room, like, you know, what's weird is, it was like him letting, you know, go take a break. Like, when he'd say, you know, we'll be back after these messages, I'd run into the kitchen, I'd try to get something to drink, I'd get a couple little snacks, and as I'm in the other room, I might hear, and now back to He-Man. I was like, oh, shoot. And I'm trying to grab my stuff and run back into the front room. So I like that. It gave you a little break. It gave you like that few seconds break to get your ass sitting down and watching the cartoon. So, yeah, I missed those. So thanks, Adam, for bringing it up. And Christopher, thanks for making sure I did bring that up. I was going to do it, but Christopher said that, so I had to get it done quick. But, all right, well, Tyler, that's pretty much been our episode, so I didn't know if you had anything to wrap it up with first. First, I want to say, information with your mom and the rocks, painted rocks, any updates to that?
Talked to her about it on Thursday, I think it was, and that there was a demand for it, and she just now started getting back into painting her rocks. So I think now that she's back on track with painting, I'm going to stay on her again this week. And all right. Can we get one of those rocks done for this week? So, okay. I'll see her on Tuesday, and I'll ask her if she's still game to do it. And because I showed her images of what I wanted done,
okay.
So and she's game to do it. I think it's just kind of getting her cracked down to okay, do this just one. Let's get that done, and we'll go from there. Because she was flattered to know that you wanted to do them as a giveaway on the podcast. So
and heck, the first one she did was Orko. So there you go. So how about that?
If you could just do one more Orko just to kind of get the ball rolling, the giveaway on the podcast, be happy with that.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, and real quick, yeah. I want to say to Grimbot in the chat room, he said, Joe, you should get that beta tape finally transferred. He said the bumpers ought to be on it. You know, I can't remember because here's the thing. I got that.
Any of the home video, maybe beta did, but all the VHS tapes had no bumpers.
That's what I mean, yeah, because as a kid, I never rented the beta or VHS tapes, but I just came across this kind of like old, rare, weird kind of like beta thing from Filmation, and I wonder if it might exist on it, but my beta player, I got to get some of those hookups for the back so I can make it work. Because first I want to view it. And then if it happened to have it, and plus I'd love to see the video quality. I appreciate the old quality of those tapes. I would like to get that converted onto a DVD. I think it'd be fantastic. So I'll try Grimbot. I'll see what I can do. And now back to you, Tyler. Sorry about that. Oh, God, what am I, Orko now? And now back to you. And now back to Tyler and Fans of Power. Let's see what the hell happened.
You know, I haven't done a recommendation in a while, but since we're talking about Orko, you know, if you're listening to this and you've heard people bash the character and things like that, check out Dawn of Dragoon, Disappearing Act, Disappearing Dragons, Driel's Return, Creatures from the Tar Swamp. There's five episodes right there off the top of my head that depict Orko and Return of Orko's Uncle, which we did in the last episode. So six episodes that all depict Orko as a very competent and likable character. So if you're listening to this and you like to follow the leader of everyone of people saying the character's stupid and silly and obnoxious and blah blah blah, then all right, take the time to at least view one of those episodes and have it shown to you that Orko is not depicted as much as everyone says he's depicted in that manner. If that makes sense. I'm using proper grammar.
No, one quick thing Christopher wanted me to talk about in the chat room. He said, what about when Orko was evil? And I know that Star Marvel issue, that's when he got that pendant that Yeah, it turned him whacked out evil, and on the cover, it looked like he could have killed Hordak, so I know he was struggling with that within that comic. I can't remember which issue it was. God,
it was issue, I think...
I think it was
issue 9 or 10.
Oh, was it? It was further?
Issue 9, and he's also depicted like that in the Shard of Darkness, I think issue 1 and 2 from the 2000 X comic as well, where he's got that kind of necklace that he found, like that diamond necklace.
I always loved the cover though for that Star Marvel one. I'll probably have to share that later, but I loved it when he's just shooting all his power into Hordak. It's like, oh my god, because he made it look like he could kill him and destroy Hordak, but if he does that, he'd destroy himself or something. I forgot how it was phrased, but yeah, I remember that well. So, but all right. Well, did you have any recommendations, anything, some places to go before you
those exercise? Check out Joe's Customs and Pop Culture Network, of course. Go to Heman.org to get, a lot of, library information about the various characters and things like that. I post links for the episodes on the Heman.org forums, the YouTube link, and then eventually the audio link. I post that. Check out Axel Jimenez's artwork. Check out Kevin Sharp's artwork. Both guys do commissions, beautiful artwork. Check out James E. Talk's YouTube channel on YouTube. With great trivia videos he's put together with fun facts of Lizard Man and Chakotay and all kinds of fun little tidbits of information as well. And I think it's about all I got for this week.
Okay. All right, me. I'm just going to say what I always say. Well, first let me say thank you, everybody in the chat room, for joining us. We appreciate all your feedback, your questions, your comments. Like I said, I say it all the time. Love having you guys here, and, just hope you enjoy it. And like I said, it's always good to have some back and forth with you, you guys as well, and hearing your thoughts on things and how things can be, interpreted. That's what this is all about. We love good, healthy discussion. I'm never going to yell at you.
Has got a suggestion for Joe and I to talk about on a future episode. Contact Joe. Contact me. Leave it on one of our Facebook posts. If you want us to talk about something, an idea, a thought, character, we encourage the involvement. That's why we have the chat room, is we want people involved. They need to help dictate what we talk about on the show as well. So anybody listening, you get an idea, throw it to one of us, and we'll get it on the next episode as well.
Exactly. So we always appreciate it. So,
not just people in the chat room, but people who listen to this, you want us to talk about something, contact us.
Yeah, one way or another, let us know. So, well, I can always tell you where to go. You can go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
That is strength, boy. That is power. The strength and power of flesh. What is steel compared to the hand that wields it?
Oh, boy. This has got to be Conan. That's Conan. No, Conan. No. Excalibur? Shoot. Right. Wait, you didn't tell me. I said Conan, and then you took it away when he was a little boy.
Didn't just stay confident with it.
Well, yeah. I thought it was when he was talking to the boy, correct? I mean, when he was younger, right? When he was a boy, and he was showing him the
Tulsa Doom, when they capture Conan at the temple, and they beat the hell out of him.
I got the part wrong. I
bet suicide.
I got it all wrong. See, so guys in the chat room and listening, I kind of got it, but I didn't get it. But that's the story of my life. I'm always screwing up these things. I tried, though.
So. It's like he got to the finish line, but he fell on his face when he hit the tape. He just tripped and fell.
I won, but I didn't win. Yeah, exactly. It's like I almost crossed that finish line with a perfect stride and confidence. But it didn't happen. I ran, I was like, yay, and then fell on my face. I crossed, but oh, what the heck.
Yeah.
All right, well, again, thank you for joining. See you guys next week. Bye.